Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers, the only dedicated lifestyle group within Random House. Potter invites readers to live well. We seek tastemakers, visionaries, and rising stars and partner with them to craft books and products that define their brand while engaging, entertaining, and instructing their audience. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hi, welcome to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. You can listen live every Monday at noon on heritageradionetwork.org or download the podcast on iTunes. Today, my guest is Sarah Brisk-Cohen, florist and owner of Blossom and Branch, and online columnist and contributor for sites like The Equals Record and my own blog, Design Sponge. So, Sarah, thanks for being here today.
Thanks so much, Grace.
So, I'm really excited to talk to Sarah. For those of you who aren't familiar with Sarah's work, she's an incredible florist, but you're also, for me, someone I've always kind of looked up to as a business owner. Even though both of our businesses are relatively young, you really run your business with so much class and pride, and I think it's a really great example. As there, we've been talking before we were recording, we were talking about the sort of wave of young women running businesses, and it's incredible on the one hand, but it can also be scary on the other hand to watch some of the bad habits that people seem to be forming. And I've always really looked up to Sarah. So I've been reading Sarah's writing on a really fantastic site called The Equals Record, and she's been writing about a completely different topic, separate from floral design and all things event land, and has been talking about sort of work-life balance, children, the dedication that it takes to run a business, and I really wanted to talk about that today. So before we launch into that, I think tied into that is actually how you got started. You were actually a social worker before you started your floral business. Tell me a little bit about how that transition happened.
It's true. I had always done flowers on the side, sort of on a lark, a little bit to foster and nurture the creative side of my life. I never had other kinds of talents like sewing or cooking or anything, but flowers really spoke to me. And I was designing and arranging and started to take up some freelance events on the side. And I always felt that I had been trained both academically and professionally in this area, social work, and as a clinician, I had a private practice and felt that that was sort of a legitimate life path. And could never quite wrap my head around, first of all, taking the risk or the leap to do something creative for a living. And also just I had all this training and I felt like, how do I just leave that all behind, that education, that training, and to do this other thing that I felt was somehow not as legitimate. So ultimately, I just continued to do freelance events on the side and found myself incredibly busy all the time. Got to a place in social work where I felt like I really wasn't passionate about it anymore, and I was really struggling to maintain my focus. And combined with a really supportive husband, actually, who said to me one day, frankly, when I had come home from a really tough day, he said, "You've always wanted to do this flower thing. Just do it. We'll find a way. We'll figure it out. Just do it. Make it happen. And if you take the risk, I really believe that you'll persevere and it'll be fine." And in fact, that's how it's turned out so far. So
I love that there seems to be this thread between those two very distinct jobs that has to do with like taking care of people and sort of caring for them. And I think as someone who doesn't work in flowers, but who loves to receive flowers, I think that that's the thing that always comes through to me is there's this, you can't receive flowers and not feel like this sort of overwhelming wash of like somebody cared enough to do this. And then the care that goes into crafting flowers, I think it's very much like a caring profession to me. Do you feel that line still exists between the two worlds?
I absolutely do. I often talk to people about my favorite moment doing, I primarily do wedding flowers, and my favorite moment is always when I can personally present the bride her bouquet. And it's quite often an incredibly emotional event for both of us, frankly. Mm-hmm. I'm really anxious to see, because I think the bridal bouquet kind of represents everything about somebody's vision about what they want that day to be like. They've thought so much about it. They've put a lot of energy into it. And so I get this personal moment and this connection of presenting this person their bouquet. And I just love that. And at the end of the day, when I've worked really hard on an event and I'm exhausted and I think about the feeling that somebody has receiving that very wonderful thing. And frankly, flowers speak for themselves, right? I mean, who doesn't love flowers? It's kind of hard to mess them up. So to know that somebody experienced that moment and then, you know, maybe walked into a reception room and just saw the place lit up with these beautiful living things, it's, you know, it's an incredibly good feeling. And it's similar to a feeling of gratification of, mm-hmm. of helping somebody in their life in another way.
You are. I think that's the thing that's easy. And I'm reminding you as well. I think people, like, we have to all remind each other in the creative communities that, like, the work that we do really does actually play an important role in people's lives. And I struggle with the same thing of, like, I run a blog. I'm not, like, changing lives or doing anything important. But there are aspects of what the creative community does that are incredibly crucial to people. And you never know what a bouquet or what one delivery of flowers is going to do to really kind of change someone's day.
Yeah, I think that's right. I really do.
So I want to talk a little bit about the confidence factor, and I think this is going to lead into your writing on the Equals project, is how did you sort of get the confidence in your own skills as a florist to think, I can do this on my own? Did you train with people? How did you get into that?
Well, initially, I certainly apprenticed with people, and I decided to sort of go from the ground up. So when I apprenticed, First, I interned for free, making no money, and then I started working, frankly, in an hourly position in retail places. Any time I had available when I was working other full-time jobs, I went and I just did the grind work, literally cleaning flowers, taking out the trash, and participating in the event and flower business, you know, from the ground up. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it was really critical to my training because I learned all of these technical skills, but I also learned how much of the business is about, you know, that one moment of presenting a bride her bouquet is an infinitesimal part of what it is that you're doing to get to that place. And so much like I talk to people all the time about, you know, much like in cooking, how so much of it is the preparation and you're chopping and shopping and unwrapping and I don't know. I don't cook, so I don't know any of that stuff. But that's flowers too, and that's maybe many creative endeavors mm-hmm. that you actually get paid to do. That it's, you know, I'd love it if so much of it, if 90% of it, were about making the pretty flowers. But really, a lot of it is just the preparation. So I think I learned that in retail and having to do a ton of flowers in a very short amount of time. I learned about pacing. I learned about buying. I learned about all kinds of things that are sort of the nitty gritty of doing flowers first. And then the confidence to go into business for myself again was more, I think, about less about my creative skills and mm-hmm. more about these other skills that I feel like I learned through my academic training and my clinical training and professional training, which is about being organized and being on time and being staying up and having to do a proposal and get it done because I went to graduate school and had to do papers on time. And, you know, those kinds of things I think really bolstered me. And I felt like, okay, if nothing else, I'll at least present decently. And hopefully that will help also to propel this creative business.
They do. I mean, those are the bare bones that are required for a sustainable mm-hmm. business. And I think people often sort of gloss over those when there's sort of overwhelming talent or something amazing and flashy to look at. And that's what, prior to sitting down to record today, we were talking about. Sort of there's this amazing wealth of new independent businesses, mm-hmm. especially living in Brooklyn. I feel like everyone has two or three side businesses. And that's incredible. But it's also terrifying because I feel like sometimes people jump into them without any thought about, do I know how to sort of run the back end of the business, which is what pays the bills, basically. I mean, it's great to get press and be exciting and be like an it person, but it's also great to like continue to have that business for 5 or 6 years yes. down the road. So that leads me to an excellent article that you wrote for the Equals Record, and it was called Destiny's Child, which I appreciate any Beyonce reference, so I'm down with that article. But you start off the article by talking about people saying that you and your husband were sort of fated to be because you met at a very young age and then reconnected and were married, and you end the first paragraph of your article by saying that you don't actually believe in destiny, that you think that what you mostly believe in is making choices and how all of those choices add up together to sort of get you where you are today. And I think that sounds like a very simple concept, but it's something that I don't think people are actually talking about, because I think a lot of people just think you're sort of handed this perfect business. Tell me about why you sat down to write this article. Where did the idea come from originally?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes people, I think a lot of what we do, especially as a business owner, is you sort of present smoke and mirrors, right? You're constantly showing the world that you're great, everything's fine, and that it all runs so smoothly and seamlessly. And I think we do that in our professional lives. I think we do that in our personal lives as well, maybe especially in our personal lives. And I've always had a lot of friends or people around me say, God, you know, you're so lucky. You're so lucky. How wonderful. Look at how wonderful your life is. And from the outside, it's like it's incredible. I have this really, really solid relationship with this wonderful man. I have a 8-month-old daughter. You know, everything is so as it should be in my life from the outside. And what I know and what people close to me know is that it required an incredible amount of work and heartache and self-exploration and examination and therapy and all kinds of things to get to this place. And that, you know, anybody I know who is on solid footing now really had a winding path to get there. And so I wanted to talk about that. And I wanted to also be vulnerable in a way to say, look, you know, we can all have the things that we want to have in our lives and our personal lives if we recognize where we have limitations and make choices and are in a process of constant self-examination. So that's really what it was about for me. It was about changing old habits and breaking bad patterns and doing a really honest kind of personal inventory.
Mm-hmm. And that personal inventory, is that something that you feel like you're going to continue to do on a regular basis or when you have time and your very busy schedule?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I don't know how else to live anymore. I think once you start opening doors in your own mind, in your own heart, there's no turning back. I mean, I don't know, you know, there's no trajectory but forward. And that, frankly, you're propelled forward whether or not you like it. Mm-hmm. So I can't live in stasis. I have to constantly be examining. And frankly, in any marriage, in any business, in any endeavor that you want to be a success, I think you have to be constantly reexamining, reassessing, refreshing. You know, and I'm sure my husband will appreciate this if he's listening or if he listens at some point. Like, yes, you know, the conversations have to happen in a relationship once a week, once a month, whatever it is, checking in. Like, how are we doing? Mm-hmm. And where are we going? And are we still on the same page about various things? And, you know, all of those things, that's work. And those are choices. And it's much easier to walk around in denial and to keep those old patterns and to have those same fights over and over again. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these are all sort of basic concepts that you learn in therapy. And as somebody who's both professionally trained and personally involved in therapy, you know, even I forget and stay pissed about the same things that I was angry about and think to myself, okay, Sarah, you can make a choice here. You can either continue to have this same argument over and over again, or you can break it down and get at the root of what's going on with the two of you and your mm-hmm. dynamic. So all of those things are behind this relationship that looks so great from the outside.
Exactly. And the same thing goes for a business. And I think those questions are terrifying to ask yes. sometimes, because I think that for me, it feels like the current mood about running an independent business, whether you're a florist or a blogger or a maker of some sort, is that you kind of put in like your chunk of time that's difficult and scary and hard. And then you reach this like incredible state of nirvana where everything's handed to you. You're just flush with orders all the time. You're on the cover of every magazine, and then you can just stop working so hard. But in reality, that's just like the beginning of the work.
God, it so is. Yeah. It's, and I was having a little bit of a conversation about this before with you, that I think, you know, it's that old adage that the more you know, the more you know what you don't know. And I feel like every month, every year in the business, I now know, oh my gosh, there are all these other things I could be doing or should be doing to stay organized, to stay present, to stay current, to network, to be you know, to put myself out there. It's almost never creatively. It's mm-hmm. almost never like, oh, I should be doing flowers this way, or I should be studying this style. It's almost always about the mechanics of the business and the mm-hmm. inner workings of how to make it run more smoothly or cost effectively, or, you know, whatever else to make the process more seamless. And so, you know, I feel like I'm always generating more work for myself, even if it's only in my own head, and that it never ends.
But I think that like short-term more work is actually what leaves your brain space to have the creative thoughts that you need in order to make the business successful. Because from the outside, all we're seeing is the creative talent. We're not seeing the inner workings of that. But I think in actuality, you have to make space for that to happen. I think that's kind of where people get tripped up sometimes, is because they don't realize that putting all that work into like the meat and potatoes every day part of your business is really what like gives you the space. And I think people skip that and then the business dies and they think, well, maybe I wasn't talented enough or I wasn't good enough. And it was like, no, you just didn't actually put the work into the day-to-day part. And I think that's where chance and luck and yes. versus choices becomes a really interesting conversation, because then you run into the part of, okay, you've gotten your business to a certain level, you've hit this plateau, things are great, but inevitably every business has to be like bumped up to the yes. next plateau at a certain point. And that takes what feels like almost more work than the initial, you know, chunk yes. of work you have to put into a business. How do you get through, or for you, what have been ways that you've been helpful to sort of get through that next stage of like, you've established your business, Blossom and Branch is doing great, but now you have like new hurdles as someone who's been around for a while.
Well, it's also about what I want in my own life. And this is where the personal mixes with the professional, because I think when you start a business, often you're in a certain place in your life and you're okay with whatever, late nights, you're okay with configuring your life in a certain way, either living less expensively or, yeah. you know, all of the constellation of things that it requires to be in that place and time and to be kind of a struggling business. And there's also some romance of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like there's some, like, look at me, I'm just doing this thing. And feeling like there are very few expectations on you mm-hmm. because, well, you know, everyone knows I'm starting my own business and who knows how it goes and people struggle all the time. But then you get to a place where you feel like, okay, now I actually would like to support myself. Now I actually would like to contribute to my family's income, or I want a bigger studio space or a studio space at all. Now I want to achieve things, you know, I want to be published somewhere, or I want to have more time or flexibility to be creative mm-hmm. and to do less of the kind of grind work. So I think if you're a person who's creative or if you're a person who's ambitious at all, those concerns are going to come for you. So you're going to be compelled to expand the business and to do whatever you can to grow. And so that's kind of, you know, I'm certainly in one of those. It's interesting that we're talking about this. I'm in one of those places now where I'm mm-hmm. sort of like, okay, now I'm at this. Now I've achieved this thing and I want more mm-hmm. and I want better and I want to work smarter. And you also feel like there are new expectations. Now people are looking to me to say, okay, well, you must know something about this now because you're in this place. So tell us how you do X, Y, or Z. And I think to myself, oh, I should probably figure that out. Probably make that happen. And so it's, you know, some of it's internal. Some of it's all about wanting to spend more time with my husband or with my baby, or to be feeling less like there's a dissonance between what I'm presenting and mm-hmm. what I'm actually doing. Also, because at the beginning of a business, a lot of it's about, you know, smiling and being a positive and highlighting all of the wonderful things that you're doing. And, you know, behind that, there may be a lot more vulnerability and a lot more fear and concern and trying to make those things match a little bit more.
That's a good one. Well, we're going to pick that back up after the break. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Sarah Briss-Cohen.
Today's program has been brought to you by Clarkson Potter Publishers. Today's featured book is The First Apartment Book by Kyle Schuneman and Heather Somerville. A first apartment allows you to finally do what you want with your own space, but it can be tricky to decorate. Luckily, 27-year-old decorating prodigy Kyle Schuneman knows that a paper-thin wallet and four plain walls don't have to stand in your way. And the 10 amazing, real apartments in this book show it. From coast to coast, these fabulous first homes are the perfect balance between cool design and comfort, and they offer plenty of practical ideas for making your apartment feel open, organized, and inviting. Examples include multifunctional studios, a loft that was sectioned into livable areas, cookie-cutter apartments with one-of-a-kind personality, shared spaces that accommodate different decorating tastes, and fantastic examples of how to display collections, hide unsightly stuff, and manage picky landlords. Kyle's creative solutions reveal how you can make your space feel much larger than it really is, and how it can reflect your passions, travels, and your location. Full of bold, vibrant photos, an extensive resource section, and hundreds of big ideas for small spaces, this book proves that there are no limits on how spacious and cool your first apartment can feel. The First Apartment Book by Kyle Schuneman and Heather Somerville is $24.99 and is available wherever books are sold.
Hey, welcome back to After the Jump. I'm your host, Grace Bonney, and today I'm speaking with Sarah Brisk-Cohen, florist and owner of Blossom and Branch, an online columnist and contributor for The Equals Record and Design Sponge. So before the break, we were talking about the idea of sort of you have to fall back in love with a part of your business when you push through the sort of first plateau. There's that initial romance of being up all night and living out your dream and maybe like quitting a job and running this incredible creative business. But then you make it happen at some level. And then you kind of have to fall back in love with what you did or find a new way to be passionate. What are some ways that you're working towards that? Because at a certain point, your passion becomes a job.
It's true. And that's your whole goal initially, right? Is to get paid to exactly. do this thing that's your passion. And then you start getting paid to do it. And you're like, okay, what else is there? So for me, it's been about, it sounds maybe trite, but diversifying. It's been about, okay, what else can I do? Primarily, I do event flowers. And so I do a lot of weddings and I do some corporate events and things like that. So there are other things that are more creatively fulfilling for me at times. And so things like teaching classes is really, I love doing that. And I've discovered kind of by accident that I love doing that. And so, you know, I've started branching out in other ways, like teaching classes. I'm doing some writing, doing some more writing about not just my personal life, et cetera, but also creative endeavors. Creating opportunities to network and collaborating with people, I find reaching out is so helpful. And I think it's a very important lesson, particularly for me, that I keep having to remind myself. It's so hard and it's so competitive in our world. And I think connecting and collaborating with people who are in the event industry, but also other florists. I'm often approaching people and saying, let's do a blog post together. Mm-hmm. Let's show our different styles in some way. Let's do a networking event. Let's do a fun event for people. And so I've been doing things like that to, frankly, keep it fresh for me and to be out and be with people. The other thing about being, I think, an independent business owner is that it's a little lonely at times.
It's like living on your own island.
It really is. And so, you know, I've always been somebody who loves collaborating and who has dreamed at various times about having a partner and about, you know, being on more of a team. I feel like I do so much better in some ways when I'm working with other people. So and that's actually a lesson I also took from graduate school. Again, the intermingling of my old academic and professional life and my new kind of creative business life is that I have a lot of lessons from graduate school where we did a lot of team projects and things where we had to be in a group. And there was always this notion of like, it's so much better and so much at a whole other level when you're working with other people or from the corporate world. Frankly, when I've worked in the corporate world, you do these like sort of team projects. So I try and reach outside myself when I need a refresher, as opposed to kind of turning more inward. And if I'm really looking hard at what's going on, if I feel kind of bored or disillusioned, it's partly because I've been alone a long time and kind of sitting in front of my computer or like at an early morning at the market, or I feel like I'm sort of slogging and it's just me in my own head. And if I can step outside of that in whatever way, I think it's really helpful.
I think that's a pretty common problem among independent business owners. It's like you end up getting stuck in your own island and it's really difficult and you forget how important it is to talk to people face to face, even if it's someone you're not going to collaborate. As a blogger, I find it incredibly helpful to talk to other bloggers who've been blogging for similar amounts of time, just to sort of have someone who understands what you're going through. And even if you don't end up collaborating, just kind of having that moment to be like, ah, you have the same issues I do, or you're running up against the same things. And sometimes just hearing that, yes, the similar business owner also is having a sort of uninspired slump or something like that, that is incredibly helpful and can sometimes be the little nudge you need to kind of move past that period.
Yeah. I think also I keep today hearing the word vulnerability in my head, and sort of we've talked about how you present and how you present to clients and you present to the, you know, design community and all of the, and so much of it is about looking like you know what you're doing and looking like you're professional and put together and have slept and, you know, whatever, showered.
Sleep, what's that?
Yeah, no, I know. But I think there are moments where it's really important to be vulnerable with other people who are business owners and even sometimes with your competitors. You know, I've shared information or taken somebody out to lunch who's a competitor of mine and said, like, what do you do about ... And I feel like there are moments where certainly that can backfire, I'm sure. But, you know, if you can build alliances in a certain way and be a little bit vulnerable with people, sometimes it really pays off. You find out that you know, you have all of these grand notions about other people who are really looking like they're making it and they're so awesome. And like, I wish I could be like that person. But everybody, all of us, we have our own vulnerabilities. And, you know, like it's secretly admitting to somebody that like, I don't know how to use QuickBooks all that. Like, you know, something like that really, I think, can be very, very helpful because it can refresh your confidence as well. Like, okay, there are ways to, you know, there's a lot that you can just learn and figure out, and we're all kind of winging it to some mm-hmm. extent.
Well, I think there's like this weird catch 22 with the idea of like faking it until you make it. I think people think like, oh, you kind of put on the right face and you know what to do and you get through it. And that in itself is a good thing. But if you aren't honest about things you don't know or have mm-hmm. problems with, then you really end up holding your business back. And I think it boils down to that. Like, I remember kids are, I feel like you're told not to ask stupid, like quote unquote, stupid questions. And I, the other day, I mean, I've been blogging for close to a decade now, and I had our like 23-year-old, a new writer, Max, show me how to use something on Photoshop. And I felt like an idiot because I was like, shouldn't I know how to do all this stuff? And I felt like an old lady at the same time. But at the same time, then I learned how to do something completely new. It made me want to work on, you know, image editing again. But that sort of stuff is important to kind of admit the places that you need some help or have some problems. And they end up being these moments where you get to learn and expand and didn't know you could still feel excited or interested about those parts of your business.
I agree. Asking questions is so, so important. It was actually something that you said earlier that sparked that for me to think about, you know, asking questions in a very supportive environment, especially mm-hmm. with other people who are in the same place as you or in the same line of work, I think is really, really important. And I've made mistakes in my business before, like with clients not asking the appropriate questions, feeling like they think I should know that, or they think I should know what they're talking about when they say, and then you end up with a miscommunication. And I've learned from that. I've learned to not finesse places where I don't know, or they're asking me to do something that's not really in my wheelhouse. And just saying yes, or, you know, kind of shining them on because I feel like, okay, well, that's what they're expecting of me, to get to a place where you can say, you know what, that's actually not what I do. And it's okay that that's not what I do, or that's not what I want to do. And mm-hmm. that's okay that that's not what I want to do. And hoping that that's how you build who you are and your identity as a business owner.
Exactly. And that place you just described is the place that I think is the reward for getting past the hard initial yes. years, is getting to that place where you realize it's okay to just be who you are, and you do not have to be everything to everybody who wants you to be that. I remember distinctly you came to at Design Sponge. We have these lunches that we in the summer we did every Friday for women running their own creative businesses, and Sarah came to one, and we were talking about sort of the proliferation of Pinterest and people bringing these inspiration boards to florists and wedding planners and wanting to just basically have this very specific style, and wanting you to, whether or not it's replicate someone in particular style or just have a style that's not yours. And I remember you clearly saying, I'll just say to somebody, that's not my style. You should go hire that person. And it, to me, felt like this just huge wave of like of fresh air, because I feel like everyone just feels like they have to do everything. But it's wonderful to sort of get to that place with experience that, you know, you can do that. Do you think that's just the result of experience, or what gave you that confidence to kind of put your foot down about that?
I think it's the result of experience. I also think it's one of my leading theories right now about how to have a successful business, whether or not it's like written about or, you know, somewhere, or it's in the literature. But I think some of what it takes to actually be successful, the people that I look around and see who have been really, really, particularly in flowers, who've been really good at this and sustained their businesses, I think are unapologetically who they are. Mm. And I'm not sure in the initial years of their business how they were able to take the risk to be that. You know, everyone has a different story about that. But watching people just say, this is what I do, this is what I like to do, this is what I can do, this is what I'm best at, and this is what I'm going to do, and I'm going to let all of the other trends or whatever else kind of wash over me. Mm-hmm. And I think those people have then specialized and become actually that person who does that thing, and then people come to you for that specific thing instead of coming to you because you're a florist. Mm-hmm. They come to you because you are Blossom and Branch. And so it's a little bit fake it till you make it. It's a little bit of I'm going to cultivate this thing, this brand, right? And I'm going to be that thing and continue being that thing and have the people come to me. And I think it's a self-fulfilling prophecy a little bit. I think if you do that and continue to do that, then people do come to you. And if not, there's really no way to do it any other way. I mean, if you build a business on I'm just going to do any old thing that anybody asks me to do that's in the realm of flowers. You never brand yourself anyway. You never become anything but a sort of run-of-the-mill thing. And I don't know how successful you can be or how sustainable that is.
Well, I think you might be. We were talking about this before we recorded, too, about I think that you can reach this level of success that maybe be like treading water, but you're never going to reach that sort of that deeply fulfilling type of success that I think comes from being truly successful or happy doing exactly what you're best at.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's a wonderful place to be if you can find it.
It's really the dream, and it's what I'm always chasing. And I think also, you know, I find myself sitting in a meeting with a client and I know that I'm at my best and that I sell myself and my business best when I'm totally in my wheelhouse and I'm in the place where I can show an image or I can talk about an experience that I've had at an event that I know was about me and the way that I design and the way that I work, as opposed to them coming to me with something that's maybe an image designed by someone else or, you know, something that's totally far off of the place that I think is appropriate either for the venue or for in the design world. That's something that I do really well. And, you know, I'm scrambling and I can hear it in my own voice, and I've done it before in meetings, and, you know, I'll probably continue to do it until I figure it out to get it, dial it really in. But, you know, I hear it in my own voice as I'm presenting myself to those clients. And I think I don't get a lot of those clients. I mean, sometimes I can really sell it and I can land those clients. And those are tough events mm-hmm. for me. I get through them and I do a good job. And, you know, but they're never my favorite events. Mm-hmm. I don't ever put those pictures on my website or you know, think fondly on those events. They're things that I really had to grind on, even if they were small events. So I think it's just about sticking to what you know and where you feel comfortable. And hopefully, eventually, you build that.
Well, I'm glad you've always stuck to who you are. I find you incredibly inspirational. And thank you so much for coming here to talk with me today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
So thanks to all of you for listening. You can visit Sarah at blossomandbranch.com. And you can also read her articles on the Equals Record, which is equals.uplusme.com. Thanks so much for listening. And we'll see you next Monday.
Thanks, Grace.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.